Welcome, fellow confidence crusaders, neuro nerds, and success equalizers. This is your podcast, Real Confidence. I'm your host, Alyssa DeVere, and I'll be sharing a bit of basic brain science, some surprising social secrets, and a touch of tough love. Why? Because I believe confidence is everyone's fundamental right and choice. So let's get to it. I would say there's a lot of people in the world that talk about confidence, but they don't always talk about it at a scientific, really how to do it level. But I found somebody that I think is not only like-minded, I think we're going to have a hard time keeping our conversation to a 20-minute podcast. So Rahul Sharma, thank you for being here with me and our listeners today.
Thank you, Alyssa. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very excited to our conversation.
Well, you have done a lot in your career, and you do a lot of work as a coach, as a teacher. You also have this beautiful book that you shared with me, Habits for Miracles. Just briefly, give me an idea, like how did your journey end you here in the same confidence crusade lane that I'm in?
So I would say it started in 2016, when I realized after spending 15 years in corporate life, that I have to give back to society, to community. And I joined a course by legendary Les Brown on public speaking. And I noticed all my fellow participants, they have a story to tell, which was very motivating and encouraging to people. And I said, I want my story to be out. And that's where the seed got started. It took time, but today in 23, my book is out.
You know, I another commonality between us, but I'm sure many of our listeners, you know, have had a career, a life, and then all of a sudden are like, you know, I want to do something more fulfilling, more meaningful, give out there. But you do also really focus not so much on the outward work, but the inner work of people. And I wonder, is that something you've always been into, like your own inner work or helping people with their inner work? Or is that part of this next journey for you?
So I would say that is how I was cultured and built up. My father always used to tell me about being a good human being than anything else. So that was in me. And as I started my career, I realized that all the outside things, it is just more materialistic. And what matters to the world to us is our internal things. So it was always throughout, but I would say the focus on this has been more in the last 5 to 6 years when I got time to think about something else, post my kids, post my professional work, marriage, everything. That's where I started focusing more on inner peace and my work started centering around it.
Yeah. And so the reason I'm asking this is not just curiosity, because I have a similar story. I remember reading help self-help books when I was in high school. So I certainly had an interest, but I think a lot of people often say to themselves, it's too late. It's too late to do that inner work. And your whole book here is about creating new habits. So let's assume that people who are listening, if you've been in that space where you've always tried to self-improve, great. We love you. But if you're here for the first time going, I'm not sure, I'm too old for that. We're here to tell you, you're never too old for it. And absolutely, it starts like in your book with just the definition of what is a habit. And it was so comforting to me. I wonder if you would talk a little bit about how you look at developing, what is a habit and the development of it and why anyone can do it at any time in their life.
So habit, the way I look at it, Alyssa, is anything that we do repeatedly and subconsciously. It is just not about doing it consistently in multiple times. You do it subconsciously. You don't have to take an effort to do a certain thing. That is what I believe is in a habit. And as you mentioned, that there is no specific age to learn a habit. Learning is a lifelong skill. You can always inculcate habit. Sooner you do it, you will reap the benefits for a longer time. Later do you do it, it will shorten the duration that you will enjoy the benefit of that habit.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny that you say that, because we talk about neuroplasticity a lot at the Institute, and this idea that as you start to build new neural pathways, whether it's a habit or a particular skill, you know, it builds on itself. It's kind of like compound interest, right? And it gets easier and easier to the point where after a while, the habit's no longer something you have to think about at all, right? So Rahul, in your book, though, you do distinguish between developing habits for things that you actually want, something that you actually want to do. You're like, I really want to lose weight, for example, and something that you think you should do. You know, somebody tells you, you should lose weight. There's a difference there, right?
Absolutely.
So why is it so much harder to develop a habit for something that we know we should, but we don't really want to?
So this ties back to the concept of change management, Alyssa. 90+ percent percentage of companies, they fail on change management because they do not share what needs to be changed. They do not let employee know what needs to be changed. Similarly here, when someone is telling you to be changed, it does not come from inner heart. When we do things internally, when we know that, hey, we want to do this, that's where the change management happens. And I'll just add one more thing. We hear many concepts and theories that people resist change. But think about it. When we go to a new town or a new country for a vacation, we are excited. When we are buying a car, we are excited. Whenever we are doing anything new, we are excited. So that tells me that we are excited because we are choosing that actual thing to do versus someone telling us, hey man, do it. So that is the real difference, that when we want something, we get all the support. Our mental is very strong.
Yes.
When someone is asking us to do it, then it is, our mindset is not right to make it happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, just to tie it back to a little of the work that I do, right? Confidence is a choice, the name of the book. And the whole premise of the definition is you have to value, need, or want something to feel confident that you even will do anything about it, right? And it's exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely.
So speaking of the brain, you also do a lot of writing around mindset. And you say in here, the positive mindset, I'm quoting the book, positive mindset is essentially the key differentiator between success and failure. Talk to me a little bit about how and why you say that.
So I was just doing a coaching call with one of the person who connected with me after 8 years. And one of the things that we were talking about was how people fail or people accept the defeat in the mind first, then eventually it happens in the real world. So if our mindset, we are receiving 80 to 90,000 thoughts in 24 hours. And 70 to 80% of those thoughts, Alyssa, are negative. So if we don't inject our body with positive thoughts, we will not be able to have that positive outlook or positive mindset. So in my opinion, that positivity really makes a difference in believing you that you can do it versus not doing it.
So I think the risk that we see a lot in probably your coaching clients as well is you're helping them with their mindset. You're trying to get them to get control, agency of their decisions, right? But a lot of times, particularly with really smart people, I see this even more so, they wind up overthinking, or as you also say, overanalyzing mm-hmm. the issue, because they want to be sure, they want to make sure that they're making the right decision. So how do you advise people to have that balance between having a positive, productive mindset versus one that is like kind of, you know, completely overwhelming and just overdone? Yeah.
So the number one problem with most of the perfectionists, Alyssa, is that they are looking for that purple squirrel, which I don't think it exists. What I believe is you need to make consistent progress to any work, any project that you are doing. As long as we are making that consistent progress, you will be able to make things work. Analysis paralysis that I mentioned in my book makes us handicapped. Mm. When we overthink about, overanalyze, So my request to fellow listeners would be, don't overthink. If you are able to make 1 inch movement towards positivity, towards the right progress, that itself is a win for us.
I love it. I love it. Now, we're going to take a quick sponsor break in a little bit. We're not going to do it yet because I really want to get into the nuts and bolts of this. But there is one more concept that when I read in your manuscript, I was like, oh, absolutely, 100% love this. And I think it's so important in light of what you just said, which is the importance of silence. So as much as like, you know, you have the overactivity, you know, the importance of silence in your head, in your world, like how, again, like talk a little bit about how and why that impacts people so profoundly.
So the silence allows us to listen to us internally. When there is so much of noise around us, we lose our ability to listen to our own mind, to our own self. So when we are silent, we tend to listen more. We tend to think more. And when we are thinking more, we are able to make a wise decision. If you see, most of the situations that become worse is because we take action in a spur of a moment. We don't spend too much of time thinking about it. So that's where silence has many other benefits about your health. So for me, when I do my swimming, that is the time, you know, when I'm silent and I'm and a lot of listening to myself, a lot of thinking happens. It's amazing. For me, silence is golden.
I'm smiling. I know our listeners can't see it. You can see it because I do the swim or the float sometimes to get that silence. But, you know, I teased everyone with the fact that you have some really concrete ways to help people manage the overthinking as well as the silence and really get in control of their mindset, really take control of the difference in their habits they want to form. So I really want to utilize that. And we're going to take a sponsor break really quick. And when we come back, if you would just share some of these profound tips that you have. Of course, there's many more in the book, but just some of them, that would be such a gift to everyone, including myself. So we'll be right back. This podcast was sponsored by the American Confidence Institute. ACI uses basic brain science to teach you not what, but how to think with more confidence. ACI is endorsed by top universities and business experts, and it is accredited by the Society for Human Resource Management and the International Coaching Federation. Learn more about ACI's uniquely empowering keynotes, workshops, online training, and coaching certification at www.AmericanConfidenceInstitute.com. So I am here with, hopefully, a new friend forever, Rahul Sharma, who shares a lot of these very simple concepts. You know, it's easy to say you should have a silent mind. It's easy to say, quite frankly, you should develop a new habit. It's easy to say, don't overanalyze things. So Rahul, let's get nuts and bolts here. We do this on our podcast every time. I'm going to start with the overanalyze part because I think there's a lot of perfectionists listening. And like, give us a good tip or two. How do you stop overanalyzing, or how do you know when you're overanalyzing? How do we break that habit? Because that is a habit, right?
And I am party to it. I was not a born person who never used to overanalyze. And I have learned it hard way. And one of the things that works for me is I set up a timeline that I need to spend this much time on a research about something. Because internet is so vast, you can end months and years in doing a research about a particular topic. Well, thanks to ChatGPT, everything has done very fast, but that is one thing. So I would advise my listeners to bound themselves with a time that I want to spend only 4 hours or 5 hours on this activity. At the end of that time, wherever I am, whatever action I need to take, I will just go and take it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, so there's times at 3 o'clock in the morning I'm waking, I'm overanalyzing, right? Is there something in that moment you can say, okay, turn it off, knock it off, stop it? Is there something that you found that helps for you?
So what I do then is I have been practicing positive mind talk. So if that thing happens, like where it is, I'm losing my sleep about something, I just tell to my mind that that will be the best product of me, or that would be the best paper, but that would be the best chapter. Or I would say is everything is in control. You just need to execute it. So some one or two positive sentences to my mm-hmm. own mind.
Yeah.
That remains in my mind, in my thoughts, subconsciously throughout that night. And when I wake up, it's a whole different ballgame that I'm ready to start and ready to go get going.
Yeah, no, I love it. You know, there's sometimes, and I am totally confessing here, that I'm so obsessed with an issue, right? Mm-hmm. That even the self-talk is not loud enough, right? So sometimes what I will do is extend what you said and actually write it down on a piece of paper. Here's the issue. But to remind myself, I'm supposed to be sleeping now. I'm tired. I'm not going to be figuring out the issue best now because I'm half fueled. But here's the issue. So in the morning, I can tackle. It's literally like, but it works for me, right? Mm-hmm. I think this part of this is that we have to remind ourselves that overthinking is not productive, right?
Right.
And
correct.
That self-talk is a good way of reminding yourself, hey, you know what? Now's not the time to do that overthinking, right?
Correct.
That's awesome. All right. So let's go back then to silence, because again, this is almost in some ways paradoxical. You know, we do a lot of overthinking, and perhaps part of the reason is we don't allow ourselves to have that downtime, that silence to refuel. So what's a good way to gain silence and know when you need it?
So to start with, I would request our listeners to have a silence moment without any interruption, which is phones, any ringer or their emails or whatever it is. They need to find a right place also. You can't afford to be in silence on a Times Square. It's not appropriate, specifically when you're doing it for the first time. So the choice of your place is important. Sometimes when you are working from home, you need to let your family members know about it, that, hey, this is what my time is. So at our home, we have, I would say not very frequently, but once in a month, we have a family silent time. Okay, it's 15 minutes. We are together, but no one will talk to each other.
Interesting.
So I'm just trying to inculcate that habit early in my kids, so that they understand what it means and why we are doing it. So that would be my recommendation to people. Find a right place. Free themselves with any disturbance and just be inside. Because when you start doing something first time, it will not be perfect.
True.
So let's start doing that 5 to 10 minutes time, setting aside, and then gradually increase it to 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes.
You know, it brings up a really interesting thought in my own head, because I do a lot of silence and you know, a part of me sometimes questions, well, maybe I'm really an introvert, right? It almost doesn't matter. But the, you know, I like to drive sometimes in silence because it's good thinking time. You know, for some people, maybe it's the shower or whatever, swimming for mm-hmm. sure, because there's no tether, right? You can't bring your phone. Well, I guess you could bring your phone to the pool and I don't advise it. But needless to say, you know, there may be a place or time in your day, and not you, Rahul, but our listeners, yeah. Of course, that they can just carve, maybe it's even a minute. And I think that's, you know, 1 minute every day that it's like, okay, I'm checking in with my brain and my thoughts to really see what's going on and to get that silence. You know, so meditation and mindfulness, this is all in around it. But do you think people, you know, in even a minute, is that helpful?
I would say it is a good start, Alyssa. Okay. Because we will be motivated to do more when we start seeing the benefit of that 1 minute. Now, for my kids right now, my kids are not seeing any benefit, to be honest. They're just saying doing it because I am asking them to do it.
Right.
Probably gradually they will start learning how it is helpful. Because when you are silent, when your thoughts are still moving.
Yes.
So I'm not asking them to do meditation yet. I'm just asking them to be silent. Meditation is a next level, probably, where you need to free yourself with the thoughts also. So that is the next level. Right now, we need to first inculcate being in a silent mode.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's getting worse in our society. I mean, I guess everyone knows this. Maybe it's totally obvious. You know, I go for a walk. I see everybody. They're on their phones. They're talking. They're listening. They're doing, right? Even when they're in nature, they're not really in nature. They're in their own little online world, right? Even in meetings, conversations, we have to fill the gaps, you know, even on the podcast for that matter, right? I think there is a generational, maybe I don't want to say generational, societal issue that we have to be busy all the time. We can't be in line for something without being on our phones doing something, right? So I hope people take what you're saying very seriously, even if it's just a minute or two or five.
Correct, correct. I would say, Alyssa, more than it is a generation, but I've also seen as a personality trait. Where people are habituated, maybe the way they have been brought up, whether their parents or siblings, where they have been constant on the go. And that is what the world they have seen. So that is what they think, that this is how the way to live a life.
I agree.
And so that is also a generation is one, you know, the personality factor, as well as your surroundings in which you have grown up.
So I know we could talk forever and there's so much more that you teach and talk and write about, but I want to give people a way to reach you so they can start to learn how to get control of their own brains, their minds, their mindsets, and subsequently their habits. What's the best way to reach you and find the book, Raul?
So my book is available on Amazon, Alyssa. It is my book title, Habits 4, number 4, Miracles. If you just type on Google Habits for Miracles, you will find multiple literature around it, my website and the book. My recommendation would be, even if you're a non-reader, give it a try. My book is such a small book. It can be finished in maybe 120 to 150 minutes, but it can help you in building miracles for you for the lifetime.
I agree. I have to say, just reading it was very calming, and I really enjoyed that experience in a book, which is very rare. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for putting my mind in a better place. And thank you for all the listeners who I know will gain so much wisdom from continuing to follow your work.
Thank you, Alyssa, for doing amazing thing for the community. I really appreciate it.
Before we totally wrap up, I want to let you know that full transcripts and show notes for this and other Real Confidence episodes can be found on www.AmericanConfidenceInstitute.com/podcast. I also want to remind you once again that the best way to get confidence is to give it to others, and you can do it just by liking and sharing this episode on your preferred podcast and social media channels. You can even give me some confidence by noting topics you'd like me to consider for the future. So for now, this is Alyssa DeVere. Thank you for helping to bring more confidence to the world. Master editing done by Ben Weinstein, with original music performed and composed by Jeff Mitchell. Real Confidence is a production of American Confidence Institute. All rights reserved.